All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense for this Monday, March 6th. It's a beautiful day on Lake Wissota. A little new coating of fresh snow coming up this morning. We're going to need a little palate cleanser after CPAC. The weekend provided plenty of headlines about right-wing extremists behaving badly. There was the Conservative Political Action Conference with its violent rhetoric, Glenn Grothman breaking his own term limits pledge, conservative justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court keeping a Trump lawyer on a state board related to ethics. Fortunately, Christina Lurie has The Uplift, a collection of other stories to give our week a positive start. In our second hour, everyday Wisconsinites getting the job done. While conservative politicians try to accomplish as little as possible, plenty of regular folks are rolling up their sleeves and working to get Wisconsin on a better path. We'll visit with Patrick DePula about how the members of Main Street Alliance are advocating for Wisconsin small businesses. And Dan Barth will explain the Citizens Climate Lobby and how anyone can help advocate for better treatment of our natural resources. And we'll wrap things up with Terry Bell giving us three things to know to start the week. But I mentioned the need for a palate cleanser after all kinds of bad political news. Somebody that can maybe, I don't know, make Washington, D.C. seem indeed palatable. It's almost like you want to be there, but only if Chief Morale Officer and now Up North News Radio White House correspondent Dr. Kristen Lyerly is on the scene, as she is right now in front of the White House, it looks like. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Monday, Pat.
You're not out there to stage any kind of, you know, coup d'etat or anything like that. You're just there to talk to people.
I am out here with over 600 OBGYNs from all over the country, and we are hitting the hill tomorrow to advocate for really important things like, of course, abortion rights, but also including pregnant and lactating women in medical trials so we have more information. And, oh, I don't know, like Medicare payment. We've got to make sure that Medicare payment keeps up with the cost of healthcare. So there are some really important things that we're talking with our legislators about. And I'm really excited. I get to visit with Glenn Grothman and Mike Gallagher and Ron Johnson's aide.
Not Ron Johnson, Ron Johnson's aide.
Yeah, this is my 13th visit here, and I haven't met Ron Johnson yet, actually.
13th, you're 0 for 13, or I should say Ron Johnson is 0 for 13 on meeting you, which is not a surprise. You know, the guy that broke his term limit pledge said he'd only run for two terms and is running for a third. And you'll talk to Glenn Grothman, and I'm guessing question number one might be something like, hey, you promised you'd only serve 10 years in Congress, and you just announced that you're running for your sixth term. What's that about?
Yeah, that would be a great question.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not expecting you to ask it because you don't want to start a meeting going, hey, you liar, you know, why did you lie? Instead, maybe helping him and others understand the real life consequences of some of their positions and decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true. And it's hard actually to talk with representatives like Representative Grothman because he has such different ideas about women's health than those of us who provide it and actually live it. So, you know, we're going to do our best to try to get that message across and make sure that he understands what the people of Wisconsin truly want and need. We're out here fighting for you, Wisconsin.
Well, and unlike in years past, if you were to look over your shoulder there, you have allies in that building at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Joe's probably waving to you right now from one of the windows going, I hope she sees me. Hi, Kristen.
Yeah, we're connected. Me and Joe, we got a thing.
Do you? Wait a minute. I've got a photo with me and Joe. I don't know if you do. It sits behind me here every morning back over here. But, of course, you have to run for Congress to get one of those things, apparently. But, hey, maybe this time. Goodness knows, you've got enough VIPs in your photo album out there. You talk to some big, important folks.
Man, it just feels so good to know that the work that I'm doing and the people, the voices that I hear from back home get to be amplified here because of all this work. It just makes it all worthwhile.
Well, especially in somebody, not just in your position by virtue of being a physician or an OBGYN, but somebody who is not, you know, a a big city doctor, shall we say, which is nothing against that. But you've been working in rural Minnesota. You've been serving women from rural Wisconsin all this time. And you're able to bring that perspective in as well, because, again, you have elected officials from those areas who refuse to represent 50% of the population of their district. And so you're willing to go out there and you know, be their voice.
And we know that people who live in those rural areas are more likely to not have access to the fundamental health care that they need. And I'm not just talking about women. I'm talking about whole families, men, children. So that rural voice is that much more important. But it's harder to get people to bring that rural voice to Washington, D.C. And it's harder to get folks here to listen. But I won't take no for an answer, Pat. You know that.
We definitely know that about you, if nothing else. So have a great time out there. I hope it's very productive. And we are definitely looking forward to talking to you once you get back about your impressions and, you know, the points made by other folks there and where you go from here. And we're thankfully you're going to do that with us. We appreciate it so much. Have fun.
Thanks, Pat. Krista Meyerly, right. The White House.
She's always wanted to do that. All right. Take care. Have a great day out there. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, our White House correspondent, I guess we now have here on Up North News Radio. Who knew? But again, she seems to be well-traveled and experienced in its ways. 13 visits to Washington, D.C. on behalf of OBGYNs, and Ron Johnson met with them zero times. Says it all. We have plenty of stories about Republicans behaving badly, unfortunately, over the weekend, and we'll start to tell some of those, plus some uplifting news coming up in a bit on Up North News Radio. Just a reminder that if you want to reach us at Up North News Radio, our studio line is 844-967-2789, and the Up North line is 715-388-7155. You can send us email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. The usual reminder that Up North News is a separate news outlet, separate entity from Civic Media, but we appreciate them letting us use 2 hours of their real estate first thing every day. You can catch the work that our team does at upnorthnewswi.com. You'll get some of that from our reporter and editor, Christina Laurie, coming up at the bottom of the hour. And to see the work that she and Sharita Booker and I and others are doing on social media, be sure you search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. That's kind of the downside of having a, you know, not totally unique name like, you know, Kreitlow, for example. Not a lot of us out there, but a few folks like that Up North moniker. So look for Up North News WI. Aaron Zommers will be taking your calls if you happen to ring in and want to talk on the show today. Aaron, I hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Got to see my family again, back in Manitowoc again after just one weekend, but that's good with me. You have a good weekend?
I did. I made this unique discovery, and I don't know, maybe it's early spring, late winter type thing that I'm already nesting is the term that gets used. How many junk drawers do you have, Aaron? You have one, right? Doesn't everybody think they have one junk drawer?
I think I probably have two, because I have one in my room and we have one collectively, like my roommates and I.
It occurred to me over the weekend as I was looking for something and couldn't think of where it is. You know, one of those things that you don't use very often, but you need it. And I have a half a dozen junk drawers. I mean, two of them in my nightstand. My nightstand has a side-by-side, and so I guess that could count as one drawer, but that's got all kinds of things. There's one in another dresser. There's two in our bathroom that basically count as junk drawers for me. And then there's the top drawer of my desk here. And so whether I'm looking for, let's say, a pair of my glasses breaks, and I keep the old pair around, it's there. There's a wireless mouse in here that I probably will never use again, but it's still in there. Here's my Bears Still Suck can cozy, you know, scissors, post-it notes, all of that. So a lot of stuff got thrown out yesterday, and it, you know, nothing obviously valuable, but things where you go, I really did not need to be holding on to this thing anymore. It's time for it to go.
Good. Did some spring cleaning.
Yeah, a little bit of early spring cleaning. That was the extent of my Sunday when we weren't working on show prep necessarily, but it might make for a good question of the week one of these days is how many junk drawers do you have, or what's the oddest thing in your junk drawer? Heck, you can even tell us that now if you go to where we are on Facebook. We do a live video feed of this here radio show, and you can go to Up North News' Facebook page or Civic Media's Facebook page or the one for Bull Falls Radio in Wausau and put your comment under there about the weirdest thing that's in your junk drawer or any other comment. And if we like it, we could put it up here on screen during the video feed. We also wanted a real question of the week. And so the Oscars are coming up this weekend. And Aaron, I'm sure you're ready to do that same thing that a lot of us are doing with increasing frequency, is looking at who wins an Oscar for this or that and going, I have literally never heard of that movie until right now.
Yeah, probably.
So we've decided to open things up a bit and ask this for our question of the week leading up to the Oscars. With it coming up this weekend, what is your nominee for best movie of 2022? Any new movie that you saw, because it's not just the theaters. There's all kinds of movies that now just come out right on streaming services, Netflix and Prime and what have you, or one of the cable channels, HBO, or even broadcast. What was the best movie that you saw in 2022? Whether it's an Oscar contender or not, what was your favorite? We would love to know. So again, you can go to the comment section underneath the live video feed of this radio show, or we'll put a post up on the Up North News Facebook page, and you can put your guess right there as well. Now that I've given you 5 seconds or so, Aaron, do you recall what your favorite movie to watch of the past year?
I think it was probably either, well, you know, I'm going to go with All's Quiet on the Western Front.
I'll go with that. Okay. Then that is one that is an Oscar contender. So you're very cultured.
Well, it's also one of the few movies that came out last year that I did see. So maybe not so much cultured as I have a very limited
opportunity.
Pool.
Yeah, that works too. All right. So again, we would look forward to your answers on that, or your responses rather. Let's do sports at 6:20 here on a Monday morning. Over the weekend, the Milwaukee Bucks winning streak was snapped at 16 games after losing on Saturday night to the Philadelphia 76ers. But then on Sunday, last night, they started a brand new winning streak. Giannis had 23 points and a season-high 13 assists. And the NBA-leading Milwaukee Bucks beat the Washington Wizards last night 117 to 111. And then there's the Marquette men's basketball team, which has won the Big East Conference title outright and beat St. John's on Saturday 96 to 94. The game probably should not have been that close. The Golden Eagles, ranked sixth in the country, had a 10-point lead with less than 30 seconds left, only to see St. John's nearly come all the way back. But in the end, Marquette prevailed. They finished the conference with a 17-3 record, and they, of course, now have the number one seed in the Big East tournament. And so Marquette will face either St. John's or Butler in a quarterfinal on Thursday in New York. As for the Badgers men's basketball team, they kept alive their slim chances for an at-large berth into the NCAA tournament with a 71-67 win over the Minnesota Gophers last night. And we have some notes to pass along on Badger women's hockey. They have now made the NCAA tournament for the 10th straight year, and they learned yesterday that their NCAA tournament field will begin with a trip to New York. They will open up on a Thursday at 5 p.m. against Long Island University at Colgate University. And then Colgate will play the winner between the Badgers and Long Island University on Saturday afternoon. Now, Long Island, their opponent on Thursday, is in the NCAA women's hockey tournament for the very first time. And that's probably because of its connection to the Badgers. The team's coach is Kelly Nash, who played at Wisconsin from 2007 to 2011. So there's a quick look up on sports coming up tomorrow on the program. We will have a representative here from Law Forward, the progressive legal firm, which has filed an ethics complaint against former state Supreme Court justice and election quote-unquote investigator Michael Gableman for his conduct in looking at the 2020 election. We're also slated to visit with Hans Breitenmoser from up in Merrill area and find out what's new in the rural economic news. On Wednesday, we're going to tell you more about the national extremists that are coming in to support conservative former Justice Dan Kelly in his bid to get back on the state Supreme Court. So we'll have more to say about that Gableman ethics complaint tomorrow and perhaps over the coming days, because again, although the investigation is over, we're still racking up the tab that you and I have to pay for it. It's north of $2.5 million now, which again, something that was set up by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. So whenever we hear Speaker Voss and Republican legislators talk about Governor Evers and money and spending and does so with a straight face, it's because he wants you to conveniently forget that the, you know, so-called investigation that he ordered at the insistence of Donald Trump has cost taxpayers. It's now a multi-million dollar waste of money. Governor Evers made a trip to UW-Eau Claire late last week. He was looking again at the science building there that needs to be replaced and speaking in favor of having that done. And so it reminded me again that this is somebody who is trying to get the work done, because I noticed another legislator over the weekend, at least one that I saw, again used the stacks of paper photo to somehow make the point that by their wanting to spend less money than Governor Evers, that means they're doing a better job. They put the Evers proposal with its stack of pages on one side, the much smaller stack of pages representing the Republican base budget next to it, and they think it shows that they're being frugal with the taxpayer dollar. It doesn't. It shows they don't want to get the work done. What you see on the Evers side of the column is people who want to get the work done. There was another train derailment in Ohio over the weekend, the second one involving a Norfolk Southern train. So maybe not keeping up with our infrastructure needs and deregulating industries, maybe that wasn't the right call after all. And maybe it is time to get the work done. And that's something that Governor Evers is looking to do, and his trip to UW-Eau Claire simply underscored, you know, the desire to get things taken care of that should have been done long ago. As I mentioned with Dr. Lyerly earlier, Congressman Glenn Grothman has broken his promise to have a term limit on himself. He said on Friday that he will run for a sixth term next year, despite promising when he first ran in 2014, he said he would not serve more than a decade in Congress. He said that, you know, a decade is enough for anybody to serve. And yet he just announced he's going to serve to go beyond that. Grothman told the Associated Press, quote, "I've talked to a lot of people over the past few months. Nobody has told me I shouldn't run again." Well, what does that mean? Nobody should have to tell you what your own promise was. Nobody should have to remind you of your promise. And, oh, if they don't bring it up, I guess it's okay for me to break it. Because that's what he's saying. He's saying, well, if nobody reminded me that I made a promise, and so if I break it, who's really going to notice? We're going to notice. And it's going to be brought up a lot. Whether it's a reflection on, you know, your work or not, it's still a promise that you made. And look, breaking a promise doesn't mean you're going to lose re-election. Just look at Ron Johnson, who pledged to serve two terms until he said he lied and that he was going to be running for a third term. And then thanks to millions of dollars in racist ads, he won re-election to a third term. So the promise is long since been forgotten. But we can still bring up the whole notion of somebody lying, whether they believed it was a lie at the time or not. And personally, I think both these guys knew that they were, you know, hosing the voters. They knew. They're like, well, if, you know, I'll say this, it'll help me win election. And, you know, if it's convenient to break that promise, I will. And they did. And so Glenn Grothman can run in a heavily Republican district and probably win a sixth term in office next year. But he's not going to do it with any sense of honor. whatever there was there in the first place. When you pledge to the voters that you will only serve for so long, and then you can't seem to get the job done, you can't seem to pay attention to yourself. Chris Rock had a new comedy special, the first one since being slapped by Will Smith at the Oscars 1 year ago. I did watch it over the weekend. I can't really repeat any of it back to you. My own very amateur review is that it started strong, it finished strong. There was a lot in the middle that was, but that to me, that's Chris Rock overall. Chris Rock's specials have these strong beginnings and strong finishes, but you know, every comedian, every marquee comedian tries to get 60 minutes of material in, and sometimes you can't do that, or at least you can't for somebody like me who's not in your target audience, without making a few folks squirm. But if you get Netflix, it's still definitely worth a watch. We will have more news coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
Welcome to The Uplift. It's our weekly reminder that while the news is important, the news can also be pretty heavy sometimes, and we'd be wise to stop and smell the roses or take a break for, I don't know, pizza or a movie or a water park. We're going to cover all those areas as we turn to Christina Lorre for some of the uplifting stories that we're following over at Up North News. Hello, Christina.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Hey, we're going to start with the movie. We're going to do the movies last, I should say, because the Oscars are now just a few days away, airing on Sunday night, March 12th. But before we do that, let's start with something about as uplifting as it gets: newborn babies and tiny hats. What's that all about?
Right. It's a story that no one can't not like. So at hospitals all across the state of Wisconsin, you've probably seen it in your neck of the woods, wherever you're listening to this from. Whenever a new baby is born, they send them home with a little cute fitted hat. And at least at SSM Health Hospitals, which are in a variety of different cities in Wisconsin, they send their babies home with homemade, you know, handmade knit or crocheted hats. And why I'm bringing this up, Pat, is because I know a lot of people took up crafting during the pandemic. So a lot more people, especially people my age in their 20s and 30s, learned how to knit, you know, as a way to pass time. So if you're looking for a really meaningful way to put those skills to use, check out your local hospital, reach out to them. And a lot of them are looking for more people to make these hats and give them, donate them to the hospital. And a lot of times these hospitals like will have specific rules of, you know, what type of yarn you should use because it needs to be hypoallergenic for obviously, you know, the newborn baby's skin. But it's just a great way to give back and, you know, do something fun too.
Yeah, sounds like it. All right. Well, next up are water parks and specifically water slides. Even more specifically, the water slides you find at Wisconsin Dells. I think late winter is the perfect time to steal away for a weekend to be warm and wet and unplugged. Always enjoy taking my daughters there over the years. And in a world that loves lists, you've got one based on water slides in the Dells.
We do. We did a very thorough breakdown. We thought there's so many, you know, so many articles about the Dells. You see the billboards along the highway everywhere, but how do you differentiate between the different resorts? I know every family has their favorite. My family was always a wilderness family. But if you want to try out someplace new, or maybe you've never been before, you've never been sucked into the tourist trap, we compiled a list and we ranked all of the Wisconsin Dells water parks by slide count. So you can really make the most out of your time there. And I'm not going to give away which park came out on top. You can check out our article for that. But the consensus is that there are a lot of really good water parks up there. They're 84 degrees year round. They're indoor water parks. And there are so many different renovations that happened. A lot of them took advantage of the closures because of COVID, and they added a lot of new slides. They also offered some new deals because I know that it seems like prices for everything are going up right now, but you can still find really good deals in the Dells, especially if you already live in Wisconsin, because you can take advantage of their weekday deals. Try to avoid weekends, especially holiday weekends, if you can. And, you know, the set spring break times is also rough, but it's great if you want to do a little 2-day getaway. If you know, it's good for kids or adults. that 84 degrees is really, really hard to pass up right now, Pat.
No kidding. I'm a little hesitant to ask about this next uplifting story because, yes, pizza is uplifting. But once you start looking at ranking pizzas, that's bound to stir up some disagreement. So how does one do an uplifting story about the best pizza in Wisconsin?
You know, this is a territory I'm very familiar with because I am from the Chicago area and we really like our pizza. We're very passionate about it. And it turns out a lot of the country doesn't agree with us. And they like to say that, you know, deep dish is really a pie. It's not a pizza to begin with. So I'm no stranger to pizza controversy. But Yelp recently released a list ranking the top 100 pizzas in America. And Wisconsin had two places on the list. Pat, do you have any guesses of what could make it? Like, what's your favorite pizza? Are you a thin crust, a pan?
Well, that's just it. I mean, you've got different styles, much less different places. And I even have a favorite frozen pizza made in Wisconsin. But I know there's a place in Shawano that everybody swears by. So I'm curious what this national survey led to.
So it actually picked one of my favorite places in Madison. It's called Novanta. It's actually both of the places on the list. So Novanta came in 83rd, and then Santino's Little Italy in Milwaukee came in 46th. And both of them are a very similar style pizza. And that was actually the most common type of pizza on this list. It's those, like, I guess, at pretty authentic Italian, where it's baked at like 900 degree ovens for only 90 seconds. That's actually how Novanta got its name, because that means 90. So that's like how long it takes to cook the pizza. But they're the ones that get that really crispy char on the crust. Mm-hmm. And it's the fresh mozzarella with basil and tomato. Simple seem to be best with these, because I live in Madison and I know one of our most popular pizzas is Ian's. They're known for their mac and cheese on their pizza. Right. That did not make the list.
No, again, it's, you know, acquired. It's acquired by a lot of people who really like it, but then there are a lot of purists out there as well. All right, just ahead of us, the Academy Awards. I know you're working on stories about Oscar winners with Wisconsin connections, as well as recent blockbusters that were filmed in Wisconsin. What are you working on?
So there are a lot of films that you know were filmed in Wisconsin because they're very obvious, but then there's some that you may not remember were. For example, the opening sequence of Bridesmaids was shot in Milwaukee. It includes like really sweeping shots of the lakefront and the Milwaukee Art Museum. But a interesting fact about that is Kristen Wiig and Megan McCarthy, Maya Rudolph, none of them actually ever stepped foot in Wisconsin to film that.
No, so, it was just all the sweeping panoramas.
It was camera magic. You and I both worked in TV before, Pat, so we know how that is. The photons get all the work.
But I still tell people to this day, when they watch Tommy Boy, and there's that one scene where they're stuck on the side of the road, and there's a sign that says Chippewa Falls, you know, 100 miles away. So I like to tell people that, you know, Tommy Boy was filmed in part in Chippewa Falls. It was not, of course. And, you know, the other, you can't talk about blockbusters with Wisconsin connections without, again, bringing up in Titanic how the Jack Dawson character said he worked on Lake Wissota, which is impossible because the lake was created 5 years after the Titanic sunk. And then if you got Annie Hall with its connection to Chippewa Falls as well. So, yeah, even a small town in Wisconsin can have movie connections.
And there were several like small towns that are being used in Wisconsin nowadays. Superior up north was for Hallmark movies, because especially like around Christmas, it makes the beautiful backdrop. They're, you know, small, quaint main streets. You can't find that in Hollywood.
No, you can't. And if you go to the Ishnala Supper Club in the Dells, there's a Johnny Depp movie connection there, because some of the scenery was filmed on that very long road leading into Ishnala. So, yeah, we've got our fair share of culture here.
Yes. And then we just wanted to bring up some notable Oscar winners that were from Wisconsin. Of course, I mean, kind of one of the biggest, possibly the biggest, Orson Welles. He was living in and out of Wisconsin as a kid. His family bounced between the Milwaukee area, Madison, and then Illinois and the Chicagoland area. But I mean, Citizen Kane, arguably one of the biggest, best movies of all time. But some more recent Oscar winners. Did you ever see the movie La La Land, Pat?
Yes. Yeah.
So that was from 2017. And the man who won for best original score and best original song for City of Stars, Justin Hurwitz, he's a Nicollet High School alum in Glendale. And he actually went to Harvard, so he has quite the track record. And there he roomed with the man who would become La La Land's director, Damien Chazelle. So talk about random roommate pairing gone right.
Gone right indeed. Now, if you'd like these and other uplifting stories, you can check out the newsletter. Christina puts it together every weekday. Go to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. And you can also send your ideas for uplifting stories to Christina Lurie at upnorthnewswi.com as well. Christina, thanks very much. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, wasn't that a great interview we had with Christina Lurie?
Oh, hi there. Did somebody have their microphone muted? Sorry about that. What we got to do is we got to get you to like wave your arms over the video feed here and go, hey, or yeah. I can just not mute my microphone and you can hear me sipping coffee. Let's switch now after having that palate cleanser from Christina into the CPAC conference over the weekend, because it was full of how did the nice lady describe it? Deplorables that were there, and they are, and they can mock the word all they want, but you know, if the shoe fits. Of course, President Trump spoke there and talked about, you know, getting back into office, and you know, the fact checkers could go crazy, you know, just going with everything that he said that wasn't true. But it's worth noting he said it to a very small crowd, you know, the most devoted of the most devoted. The conference was otherwise a bomb. But let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of what the former president told the tiny crowd.
Under my leadership, we will use all necessary state, local, federal, and military resources to carry out the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. Oh, I won the second election. Okay, I won it by a lot. You know, when they say Biden won, the smart people know that, didn't they? I am your warrior. I am your justice. And for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution. I am your retribution. Not gonna let them.
Yeah, it's all, again, about the grievances. It's grievance politics. It's nothing on behalf of average Americans. Listen to Thomas Homan, the former director of ICE, and you know, his description of the family separation policy, which brought such horror to people trying to flee violence in Central America.
And I'm sick and tired of hearing about the family separation. And no, I'm still being sued over that, so come get me. I don't give a right? Bottom line is,
again, showing their real character. Here's Nikki Haley, essentially, in my view, spitting on the graves of a million Americans in how she describes the pandemic.
Wokeness is a virus more dangerous than any pandemic, hands down.
Sure. Then there's Donald Trump Jr. doing what he does best, being a jerk, talking about the newly elected senator from Pennsylvania.
Like, I don't know, it's sort of weird that Pennsylvania managed to elect a vegetable. Well, I'm not discriminating against enabling. I'd love for John Fetterman to have, like, good gainful employment. Maybe he could be, like, a bag guy at, like, a grocery store or...
You know, truly describing what a millionaire's kid sounds like and what he thinks people are worthy of doing. And then finally, there was the conservative media speaker who is now denying that he was advocating for the genocide of transgender Americans, but you listen.
There can be no middle way in dealing with transgenderism. For the good of society, and especially for the good of the poor people who have fallen prey to this confusion, transgenderism must be eradicated from public life entirely.
Transgenderism must be eradicated from public life, which was this speaker's way of saying, well, I'm not saying we should, you know, get rid of transgender people, just get rid of transgenderism. And as others have said, you know, just replace that with Judaism, that we're not advocating for getting rid of, you know, Jewish people, but let's get rid of Judaism. And then there won't be any more Jewish people, is essentially what he was saying. And you can say that about anything, about race or what have you. And that kind of rhetoric, while he would like to think that he's being, you know, so clever, he's too clever by half and knows damn well that that is the kind of rhetoric that leads to violence, that will lead to violence. And that's what the, that was what was happening at this clown show, was much like in years past, it set the stage for January 6th. It is now setting the stage for, you know, whatever it is that will follow. It's worth noting as well that as CPAC was wrapping up, we also heard from the former Republican governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, who said he will not run for president. If you are of one of those Republican folks who would like your party to return to sanity, this is sad news. Larry Hogan is as close as it comes to mainstream Republicans that you would find on your street today. And he looks around at the circus and says, nope, this party is not for me. We'll have a little history lesson and music break next. You're up north.
I said to him, Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money, mate.
Okay, we're not always going to do big band music off the top, but yes, some days it seems like a nice way to start the music history segment. This is the Harry James Orchestra, the number one song on March 6th, 1943, with I've Heard That Song Before. Aaron, you asked.
Have you really heard this song before, though, Pat?
No, I've never heard this song before, and it just seems like it feeds into a loop. No. What song? That song. Who's on first? I don't know. But there it is. Harry James, number one hit this day, 1943. I've heard that song before. And now you have. The guitarist and vocalist for Pink Floyd, David Gilmour, turns 77 today. And, you know, Aaron, that's actually a good point for us to, if you don't mind my calling an audible, let's interrupt and talk about Gary Rosington, too. Because David Gilmour, again, it's his 77th birthday today, guitarist and vocalist for Pink Floyd. But it's also worth noting that over the weekend, Gary Rosington passed away at 71, the guitarist for Lynyrd Skynyrd. In fact, Gary Rosington was the last surviving original member and helped found the group. And he died yesterday at the age of 71. He cheated death more than once. He survived a very bad car accident in 1976. He was one of the survivors of the 1977 plane crash that killed singer Ronnie Van Zant, guitarist Steve Gaines, backing vocalist Cassie Gaines. He received two broken arms, a broken leg, a punctured stomach and liver, but then recovered, had quintuple bypass and a heart attack in 2015 and other subsequent heart surgeries. But now with him being gone, what we will remember most is his work for Lynyrd Skynyrd, and especially being part of that ensemble that did the 10-minute version of Freebird. Okay, let's go back to a couple of other birthdays. 1947, so that would make them 76 years old today. Three baby boomers turned 76 today. Kiki D, who had Don't Go Breaking My Heart with Elton John. Rob Reiner is 76. Reporter John Stossel is 76. Not a great day in the U.S. history books. The Missouri Compromise was signed into law on this day in 1820 by President James Monroe, which allowed Missouri to enter the Union as a slave state. The Alamo fell on this day in 1836 with all of the Texas defenders killed. On this day in 1857, the Dred Scott decision. The U.S. Supreme Court back then ruled 7-2. The Constitution did not confer citizenship on black people. No word on whether it's true that Samuel Alito begins each day lighting a candle and praying for the Dred Scott standards to apply once more. That's only a rumor. Cannot confirm it. One of the most landmark early instrumentals of the Motown era was a number one hit this day in 1965. That, of course, would be The Temptations, hitting number one on March 6th, 1965, with My Girl. A year earlier on this day, March 6th, 1964, boxing champion Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad Ali. And another birthday, Shaquille O'Neal turns 51 years old today. The first ever all-female band to have a number one album, that happened this day in 1982. And that was the Go-Go's, again, the first all-female band to have a number one album with Beauty and the Beat. That happened this day in 1982. We've had a lot of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame mentions around this time of year and Grammy mentions. And, you know, one more to share with you. It was on this day in 2000 that Eric Clapton was inducted as a solo artist into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That makes him, or made him, the first person to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame three times. He had previously been inducted as part of the Yardbirds and Cream. Let's turn our attention now to this day in the Up North News coverage of Wisconsin over these past 3 years. And again, we have notes from 2020, 2021, and 2022 to share with you. Let's go back to on this day in 2020. When Joe Biden had just become the front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination. And we wrote at the time that by a remarkable stroke of political timing, just as the emergence of former Vice President Joe Biden as the front runner for the Democratic nomination was matched with Senator Ron Johnson announcing that his Homeland Security Committee would vote on subpoenas to investigate Biden's son, Hunter. Johnson himself, you'll recall, was a witness to President Trump's words and actions in deciding to withhold congressionally approved aid to Ukraine as it fended off military attacks by Russia, conduct for which Trump became only the third U.S. president to be impeached and put on trial. Johnson voted to acquit Trump and instead tried to divert attention to Hunter Biden and a Ukrainian gas company rather than the actual impeachable offense that had been committed by President Trump. On this day in 2021, here's Senator Ron Johnson again. 2 years ago today, he temporarily delayed Senate consideration of President Joe Biden's American Rescue Plan, using a procedural motion to block a vote by forcing Senate clerks to read aloud the entire 628-page bill. So the clerks had to begin that process at 3:25 in the afternoon, and they had to read until 2:05 in the morning. Jerks to the clerks. The next day, Senate Democrats promptly and quickly passed the American Rescue Plan. It passed without a single Republican vote and has gone on to rescue the economy from the pandemic recession and will pay dividends for many years to come. 1 year ago, this past week, all of Wisconsin's Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives voted against a bill that would have dramatically boosted health care services and disability benefits for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. That's Tom Tiffany, Glenn Grothman, Brian Stile, Mike Gallagher, and Scott Fitzgerald all opposed the bill, even though it passed by a wide bipartisan margin. 34 Republicans joined all Democrats in voting for it, but none of them from Wisconsin. The bill would eventually pass into law later in the new year. And so that's a look at the stories that were covered by Up North News. And if you'd like to get the Up North News letter, all you have to do is go to upnorthnewswi.com, click on newsletter in the banner up top, and you can get subscribed that way. If you have any questions about it, email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com or go to upnorthnewswi on social media and get signed up for our newsletter there. And as for Up North News Radio, well, it's very easy to go to civicmedia.us. And from there, you can listen back to any shows that you might have missed, or each hour of our show is turned into an episode of a podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast as well. We'd love to have you along. More in our next hour for a Monday morning. You're Up North.